Welcome to Trusting Children Podcast, episode 10. This is so exciting, the 10th episode of the show. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening and supporting me on this project. Last week, the podcast got to over 1,000 downloads. I can't even begin to express how grateful I am for every single person who takes the time to listen. Thank you for being here. I'm Aisha, your host. I'm a parent, just like everyone else, trying to do my best. Early childhood development has always been something I've felt passionate about. I created this show to share what I've learned with parents all over the world, to support and guide you in bringing up your young children so that together we can raise a better generation for a better future. Welcome, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the 10th episode of the show. Montessori has become very popular amongst parents in the last few years. But what is it that has attracted so many of us to this philosophy? What are some of the most important fundamental principles of this approach, and how do they relate to parenting? What are some of the most common misunderstandings and myths about the method? And what can we as parents do to implement some aspects of this philosophy into our homes? In today's episode, I'm speaking to Corinne Robin, who is going to answer these questions for us and more. Corinne is a psychologist and a Montessori teacher. After working several years in her home country as a psychologist, she moved to Ireland with her husband. It was there that she started working in a nursery and discovered Montessori education. After having her first child, her passion for the philosophy grew and she qualified as a Montessori teacher and managed a preschool. Corinne has been running a Montessori-based parent and toddler group and coaching families for 9 years now. She also runs an online group for over 18,000 parents, sharing her knowledge and passion with people from around the world. In 2018, Corinne realized that families needed more support and launched her popular online parenting courses and monthly subscription boxes full of personally designed Montessori materials. Welcome, Corinne. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here and I'm ready to chat about Montessori.
Montessori. Montessori is becoming quite a popular trend. I don't really like that word, but let's say trend amongst parents. And what I'd like to chat to you about today is to find out what exactly is Montessori and why is it becoming so popular? Why are so many people talking about it and getting excited about it? And how is it relevant to parents? Because Montessori, I think most people might know it from an educational point of view, that, you know, Montessori schools. So why is it so big in parenting?
Yes, of course, Montessori is first method of education for school, and it started by Maria Montessori more than 100 years ago, observing children in work as a doctor. So she was working with disabled children. Now, what we put in disabled children at the time was much broader than nowadays. But still, she was in charge of a group of children who were considered not being able to be educated. And she managed to educate them quite well. So she was impressed by what she was able to do. And then she decided to go into public schools and reform the whole public system in Italy. And, you know, we're talking about the beginning of the 20th century. And obviously schools nowadays have changed so much. Okay. So mainstream schools nowadays are not what it was 100 years ago. But she was not given that opportunities, but instead a kind of a private company ask her to take care of children under the age of 6, because at the time schools was not mandatory for children under the age of 6. The children were either in their family, you know, mm-hmm. with a nanny, or just when they were coming from poor backgrounds, they were just left by themselves, basically. And so the story was that that private company was building houses and flats in the slums of Rome, and they had built those beautiful houses and flats, and children were destroying them because they were left unattended by the families living there. And so they asked Maria Montessori to take care of those children and giving her free reins to do whatever she wanted with them. So it was an opportunity for her to observe children, neurotypical children, basically, and to see what she could do. And then that's how she developed the method. So it, at first, it was really only in the schools. And I think with the rise of social media and blogs and so on, more and more Montessori teachers basically started to show what they were doing in the classroom through blogs. That, oh, it started like when I started to discover Montessori, became a teacher, I remember my trainer telling us, oh, you should check that blog and you will have lots of ideas. And that, oh, it started. And I started blogging, you know, like 12 years ago. And we were just showing to kind of other teachers, not thinking about parenting. And then obviously some of us were having children, so we were doing it stuff at home as well. And I think that, oh, it started first with blogs of Montessori teachers, and then, you know, with Facebook coming and so on, it became more and more visual. And so obviously it became a trend in parenting, because more and more Montessori teachers were kind of sharing or to kind of take the principles of the Montessori education and adapt them for a school environment, probably more into the homeschooling world first. But I think many Montessori teachers started to explain more and more that the principles of the Montessori education, what Maria Montessori has observed about children, can be used by anyone, basically. And it's not about just the materials and teaching children to read, write, and to count. It's much more about the way we see our children and how to observe our children to make sure that we cater for their needs, basically.
What would you say some of the most core principles and aspects of this Montessori philosophy would be helpful and useful to parents? Like, what could we transfer into parenthood?
I work mainly with parents of children under the age of six. So what Maria Montessori has observed is like children develop in the same way. So all children under the age of six are learning through hands-on activities, you know, in a very concrete way. They need to experience the world around them. So it would be to encourage parents to let the children, you know, experience the world around them, to be able to touch, explore, and so on, and to explore through the five senses. That would be one of the main things. The other thing that she has observed, it's like children are very much more attracted by the real world. And it's something that is interesting because, you know, as parents, generally, when we have children, we see...
We want to keep them away.
It's also, we see, you know, all those toys that are pretty much fantasy-based, you know, like that cartoons and that what we have, this idea of childhood like Disney and so on. And obviously at the time of Maria Montessori, we didn't have that much fantasy, but nowadays it's very much prevalent that it's nearly only that. And I like that Maria Montessori kind of bring us in the real world, because, you know, when you observe properly a very young toddler, you know, they are amazed and when they see a ladybird in the garden, they manipulate, you know, everyday objects and they are amazed by that. And so they discover the world. And as grown up, obviously, you know, we get used to a world, so we need a bit more. So we need fantasy. But very young children don't need it. And so I think it's nice to respect that in children and to give them more of what is real and hold on onto, you know, fantasy-based, and let them discover that by themselves. And that's one of the things that I like to say, you know, keep it real. And also she gave at the time, you know, and I think that's still true for most parents, you know, we tend to protect our children from what is difficult in life, and we protect them and we kind of keep them into a playful childhood. And modern parents, maybe not that much our own parents, but we tend to keep them away from doing chores. And when we observe very young children, they do love to help us. Okay, it's not always helpful, but they do love to help us. And they learn that way because, you know, the ultimate goal is to grow, is to be a grown-up at some point and to be a fulfilled citizen in our society and to participate. So they need to learn to become independent. And it's not about forcing them, but definitely, you know, making sure we make space for them into our daily activities. And generally, you know, very young children, they just love to help. They love to learn how it works to use the washing machine, the laundry, you know, and cooking, baking. They all love that. And so,
and being involved in the household generally.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. And so we have a tendency as parents to give them a play kitchen instead of letting them help, because we don't see them as capable, as able. And yeah, maybe I think Montessori teaches us that our children are very able. And so that gives us permission to let them, you know, help and do stuff with us.
Yes, that's so true. And all of my children, depending on age, they help in different ways. So when the twins, when they were one or coming up to one, they would stand at the dishwasher and take out a fork or a spoon and pass it to me. And now they can take things out by themselves and sometimes even put them in their cupboard. And same with the washing machine, you know, the twins will want to put the laundry inside the washing machine. And then my 4-year-old, she wants to pour the detergent. She wants to press the buttons. She wants to set everything up. So yeah, involving them, they really enjoy that and they really want to be part of it. I have another question for you. There is a lot of information out there. Like you said, social media has exploded over the last few years and there are tons of resources and tons of blogs and articles and Instagram accounts and Facebook accounts and groups that you could search for. But what concepts, so say a parent that was new to Montessori, they would like to start implementing the philosophy into their family. What would you advise parents like that to focus on first? Like if somebody was new to Montessori, where should they start? What should they focus on first?
Well, I would start on developing independence. So making sure you focus on all the skills a child needs to become independent, like, you know, dressing up, preparing a snack, pouring his own drink. All of that, you know, basic skills. But sometimes as parents, we do that for our children, you know, because we are parents. So our role is to take care. So, but I think it's nice if we start to think, okay, our role is to teach you skills instead of just taking care of, for children. And, you know, yes, definitely focusing on independence would be the first thing before starting to think, okay, I'm going to buy that Montessori toys or, you know, bed or furniture or shelf or tray. Just focus on what can I do to help my child to be a bit more independent today. So every time you observe yourself doing something for your child, you can try to take a mental note and say, okay, what could I do to help my child to do that by himself next time? And then that's little things that you're going to change in your house. You know, maybe the stool in the clock room for your child to sit on, to put on his shoes. Maybe have a peg for your child to put his coat on at his level. Or maybe have a smaller cup for your child to drink from. It's all those little things. So you can do that generally even without spending money, just by using what you have in your house or buying like a common hook, you know, those kind of easy to put on the wall hook. It can be done very easily. You don't need to do 2 years of training to do that. Yeah. You can just do it today, basically. So that would be my main thing, is to focus on independence first, definitely.
Thank you so much for those tips. I really love how you said that our role as parents is obviously to take care of our children, but also to teach them new skills. And we teach them all those life skills, like you said, getting dressed and putting on their shoes and preparing their food. And yeah, it's so valuable. And Montessori, I guess, teaches us the value in allowing children to do these things for themselves, or learning how to do these things for themselves. So if parents have started implementing a few things, they've started giving their child a little bit more independence and bringing Montessori into their home, how would you say they could grow as a Montessori parent? What are some next steps or some things that parents could aim for or things that they could work towards?
Well, I think another big principle in Montessori is the freedom within limits. Mm-hmm. So you might have heard a lot about Montessori is about letting the child being free to explore, being free to make mistakes, free to walk as long as they want with the material. And So what happens quite often is all of a sudden parents left their child being free to do whatever they want, or they struggle with that concept. But obviously it's always what we say, freedom within limits. It's a bit the basic of the Montessori discipline. It's freedom within limits. So it would be to kind of try to explore that a bit more in depth. And because those limits are generally what we say, the basic limits in life are limits for your own safety, safety of others, and, you know, safety of material things, basically. You don't destroy stuff. And so if you focus your rules, your house rules, your parenting rules around those three safeties, then you will be pretty much sorted. So just to see how much freedom you can give to your child according to his age, how much control you can give them about their life. And so it's all about respect and treating our children like human beings, and not being those kind of overpowering parents who have all the powers because you're the parents. And it's pretty much, you know, she started at the time 100 years ago, children didn't have a place in society, you know, they were not considered until they were 7 years old. And then they were pretty much controlled, you know, in the school environments and by the parents. So until you were an adult, basically, you didn't have a lot of choices in your life. And still, nowadays, you know, children cannot choose much. So if we have that kind of idea that we have to respect our children, because just we love our children and we want to respect them and we see them as human beings with as much right as us, then we're going to start to give them a bit of control, because it's just, you know, obvious that we all want to have control over our life, right? Grown-ups and children alike.
And it could be little things. So obviously you don't have to just give them control of everything from day one. What sort of things could you start with? Like some small examples, control.
Well, for example, you know, you give two choices for clothes. They can choose between having, you know, the yellow cardigan and the blue cardigan. But obviously you still put in the wardrobe clothes that are appropriate to the weather, okay? Because if you leave, you know, in the middle of the winter, a pretty flower summer dress, you know, and you let your child choose, yes, it's possible that your child is going to choose that, and then you are a bit of an issue. So you always make your life easier, you know, you kind of pre-select the choices. That's what I say. And if you give healthy food to your child, that's kind of your role as a parent. But your child can choose between a banana and an apple. Okay. Maybe you can say, do you want to brush your teeth first or take your bath first? Or let's choose two books for bedtimes. And so they choose two books and they choose which stories. And so when, you know, children are children. So they are young, they are inexperienced in life, and they kind of need us as role model. Okay. They are attached to us. So they will want to connect with us and they will want to cooperate, actually. They kind of like, that's the nature of life, you know, we are the one helping them and teaching them. So they're not on purpose trying to kind of be opposed to us all the time. So when we give them those little choices, that's enough for them. They do not need to choose absolutely everything. But having a bit of control on their life is what they need, basically. Just to feel feel valued, to feel that their voice matters, that their choice matters. And obviously, as they grow, you give them more and more choices. You know, when you have 8 years old, they choose what after-school clubs they're going to go to. If your child say, I really don't like piano, and they've tried piano for a year, if you keep insisting because you consider that music is a good skill, then it's not very respectful of your child. So you need to take into account some other things, obviously, you know, budget and so on, but you cannot offer everything to your children. But you take more and more decisions as they grow up. Like my daughter, she's 13, she chose GCSE, for example. We didn't impose anything. We explore each options with her, but at the end she chose. And yes, I was, as a mum, a bit disappointed that she didn't choose music, because, you know, she's still playing music. But it's her choice and it's her life, ultimately. Yeah. She will make choices for her own life, and one day she will not be with us anymore, so she has to make choices. And we can only guide them, ultimately.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Okay, so if you don't mind, I'd like to do a little bit of myth busting.
Okay.
Because I feel like there is the positive side of there being so much information available. But on the flip side of that, there is also quite a lot of misinformation and maybe misunderstanding about the Montessori approach. So what would you say, or maybe you've heard some of the most common misconceptions or misrepresentations that you would maybe advise parents to watch out for or just be mindful of?
One of the myths that most parents in my group are talking about is the fact that Montessori was against fantasy, against fairy tales and so on. And even myself as a young Montessori teacher, you know, I was pretty strict about that. But what she has observed, as I said earlier, is that children are happy with the real world. Basically, they explore the world as it is directly around them because they need hands-on concrete experience. Obviously, they can only explore what they can see, touch, smell, and so on. So they explore real things around them. And so it doesn't mean that they will never want to explore fantasy. And it's definitely different. Not introducing fantasy, fairy tales, and so on too early doesn't mean that children don't develop imagination. It's something very different. So imagination is just the ability to imagine something that is not there or make believe, like using a banana as a phone, for example. Yeah. You know, it's imaginations. So what she has observed is that children use imagination based on reality, basically. So they will pretend that a banana is a phone, not pretend that a banana is a fairy, for example. So they will use what they know and they will start to imagine. And definitely, you know, Montessori is all about that. There is no, we're not opposed to pretend play. We're not opposed to imagination. She just was warning parents not to use fantasy as a tool to control our children, which is something that is encouraged around us. You know, when we talk about Santa Claus, for example, many, many parents use Santa Claus as a tool to kind of control our children and say, if you're not nice, you might not have gifts from Santa Claus. And teachers in school do that as well. And definitely I've been raised with this, with those things. And so she really warned us not to use fantasy, because children are very credulous, okay? They are meant to believe us, you know? Otherwise, if they don't believe us, you know, they're in trouble because they really need to listen to us, you know, for their own survival. So they need to trust us and to believe us. So it's very easy to make them believe into anything when they are very young. So she kind of warned us not to abuse that kind of power that we have. But obviously, she was reading fairy tales to her own grandchildren, but they were older. So we need to kind of be careful and just wait for the moment until children understand the difference between reality and fiction before we introduce fairy tales, and if you want to introduce fairy tales. So I think many parents are a bit upset when they heard about that concept, and some dismiss the world of Montessori because of that, because they really want to introduce Disney movies and stuff. When you know exactly what is going on, then you can definitely introduce that if you wish. But just don't forget the real world as well.
That's it. I think it, you know, is about being aware of it and making sure that your children have plenty of experiences in the real world and they're grounded in the real world before understanding things that aren't necessarily real. So my daughter is 4 at the moment and she likes unicorns. She talks about them a lot, and every so often she asks me, are they real? Because I have told her that no, they're not real. They only exist in stories or books or films. And every couple of days she just goes back to that just to check, are unicorns real? And we have the conversation again. So she's still, almost like checking and grounding herself in what's real and what's not real. So,
and probably fantasy helps children to understand that there are things that are not real.
Yeah.
And there are things that are real. We just need to be careful at when it's appropriate to introduce that. And Maria Montessori was saying not under the age of 6, but we do know, have more studies that show that most children understand, you know, the difference between fantasy and reality earlier than that. And then you have to observe your own child. My daughter was super sensitive to that. So we kind of delayed it when we realized that she was afraid, properly afraid of some aspect of fantasy. So we started to move away from that because she was a bit terrified by some aspect of it. And then, you know, later on, you know, it's not because you introduce it later or that you don't encourage it that much during the early years that your child is going to miss out. She had been fascinated by Harry Potter. She started to read it at 9 years old, was totally fascinated and was playing, you know, in her head and that she would receive the letter, you know. And, she, you know, she was much older, so she knew it was not real, but she wanted to believe, basically. And that was fun for her to believe. And she was definitely totally into that, despite that she was 9, 10, 11. because it's fun. You know, it's fun as a grown-up. The way we watch fantasy-based movies, because it's fun. We like to believe for 2 hours that it's real. So yeah, it's an escape when we are an adult.
There's time for it.
That's
They've
it.
Got their whole life to...
That's it, yeah. So that's one of the biggest myths, I think. Some of the myths, it's about, like, I touched on it as well, like, children are free to do whatever they want, which mm-hmm. is not true, obviously. There are limits. And then regarding Montessori schools themselves, there is a bit of a myth around the fact that Montessori schools are all about work and it's not fun, and mm-hmm. Children are a bit controlled and can do only this and that. But when you observe in a Montessori school, yes, if you go into a Montessori school that does it properly and they have only Montessori materials and so on, if you go and observe, actually, the children are happy to do that. Yes, they don't have toys, they don't have dress up, pretend play, and these kind of things, but they are happy to do what they do. And we need to remember that a Montessori school is just 3 to 6 hours during the day. So
it's school.
That's a school. And so if you choose this kind of school, that, yes, yeah, they're going to learn through this kind of materials. And then they have the wool. Life with you as parents. So basically they're going to play, they're going to go to the park, they're going to go and see friends. And obviously they interact a lot in the classroom with their friends. Mm-hmm. So they do not need to have toys and other kind of activities during those 6 hours. They are too busy doing what they're doing and learning the way they learn. But yeah, it's different. And yeah, it's always surprising for parents to see the children focus so much or being calm. And not shouting and running around and playing in the same way that you would see them playing in a regular nursery. But I think the best thing is to observe and to feel how the children are feeling. I don't know if you think about any other myth that I can explore, because maybe you have some myths as well.
If you can just briefly talk about resources, because I think that's also quite... common that people get confused about resources that might be Montessori and resources that maybe are advertised as Montessori just to kind of get parents to buy them because of the label.
Yeah. So I think another myth now with social media is we see a lot of toys that are labeled as Montessori, and it's like any wooden toys company put Montessori next to the name, next to the toy. To say, like, okay, it is a Montessori toy. So I think parents can be very careful with that as soon as they see Montessori next to a toy and kind of explore the company. Is it a company, you know, who has decided the company that it was a Montessori toy? Because not all wooden toys are Montessori. So we need to think if the toys teach one skill at a time, it's not overwhelming, allow the child to explore. But, you know, many, many Montessori toys that are said Montessori are not Montessori. You know, I've seen some toys that have like cartoonish figure. Those toys do like 5-6 skills at a time. You know, you teach colors and shapes and numbers and letters at the same time in the same toys. And they call that a Montessori toys because it sells. You know, it's always a bit bizarre for me to talk about that because obviously I have my own product. So, but yeah, I think we have to be careful. When we see any kind of object being said Montessori, like there is a Montessori flower bed, for example, this kind of house shape flower bed. So it's beautiful. Okay, if you have the budget, you like to have a house with nice furniture, go for it. You know, it's nice. But for me, a flower bed is just a mattress on the floor. It's enough. So you do not need them. But if you like
it's
that.
It's the concept rather
yeah,
than
that's
the...
it.
The concept that matters rather than the product itself.
That's it. So there's a ton of stuff like that, you know, that are available. So just do a bit of research and really think carefully, you know, do I really need that? Do I want to spend my money on that? Does my child need that? And just make sure it's not because it's on Instagram that it's Montessori.
Yeah. And maybe another one that just came to mind is about the toys on shelves, that a lot of parents come across that. That's possibly the first time they come across the concept of Montessori, is the beautiful shelves with toys on them, but then possibly don't always look into it further. So just to kind of express that it's not just about the toys and the shelves.
Yeah. So I did a blog post actually on Instagram when I say no to the Montessori shelfie. And I think that because there is a lot of pressure to show what we call a shelfie. So every week, like say, I've rotated the Montessori toys, and this is what we have this week. But so obviously the concept of rotating toys is interesting. We don't do that in the classroom. Okay, we have shelves for each area. And obviously, because we have 20, 25 children, all the activities are always in use by some children. So we don't need to rotate. We rotate maybe some topics, some books, but the bulk of the materials is always the same. At home, it's a bit different because we lack in space, or children go through stages, so they're not interested anymore into the toddler toys. And so you cannot rotate because of that. And obviously, the shelf is just that we need to show to our children what they have. Otherwise, if all the toys are in the toys box, well, they will not be interested. But there is a lot of pressure to have this kind of perfect shelf. It's just not just a shelf. It's a specific brand or a specific kind. And that can be anything. You know, I've used my coffee table for a long time because we were renting houses and we moved a lot from one country to the other twice. So I was using what I had. I go sometimes help families, and sometimes all we use is a little table mat that we put on the floor because that's the space we have. And as long as your child can see what he has, you don't have to have a shelf. And also, you know, you do not have to rotate for the sake of rotating toys. It's always based on observation. So yeah, it would be nice if we could remove the pressure of the Montessori shelfie. Yes, definitely.
And focus on other aspects of the
absolutely, yes,
first.
Yes.
Like
yes.
You said, independence, maybe start with that rather than the shelfie. Thank you. Okay, now I would like to ask you, in your opinion, what would you say the most challenging parts of being a Montessori parent are? And how would you maybe advise parents to cope with challenges that they might come across?
Well, I think we have, as parents, we always have expectations of our children are developing and growing and are supposed to act. And that's the same. When we discovered Montessori, we have expectations that because we do Montessori, because we have Montessori materials and activities, our children will focus on those activities. So I think that's a bit challenging when we have this idea of, you know, I had that idea when I started Montessori with my own child that she will focus on those little activities on tray and then I would have 5 minutes to drink my tea. That was my first expectation. And obviously that was not working that way. She was always, because we were just the two of us, she always wanted me to be sitting next to her, doing it with her. And I was like, you know, I don't have 5 minutes. I thought, you know, with your little shelf, I would have 5 minutes for myself, or I would be able to cook or whatever. But obviously it's a lot of role modeling and what does she need exactly? So you need to observe. And I think there is that aspect, observing constantly your child, having a bit of a knowledge about what a child needs, sensitive periods, that aspect you need to work on to make sure that you have a bit of knowledge in that. Otherwise, just taking some nice toys, putting them on a tray is not going to help your child if it's not what your child needs. So observation, it's a skill to develop because that's going to help. So I think that's something that you need to work on as a parent.
I did an episode on observations, actually, the first episode. So I'll link that in the show notes if anybody's interested in listening and learning more about that too.
And also, we say in Montessori that there is the proper environment. So basically, your house, the object, and the toys. There is your child using that, and then there is you. And you are, as a parent, you are the one who prepares the environment constantly. So it's up to you and it's evolving. So it's never finished, basically. So it's your role as a parent is to constantly prepare the environment. So it's hard because it's kind of constant because your child changes during the early years. So you might think, okay, that's done. You know, I've done a shelf. He has this and that. And then you still need to do something. You still need to role model. You still need to teach skills. And it's you constantly, the bridge between your child and the learning, and it's our role as parents. And also when we don't feel good, when we are a bit depleted and so on, then our child is going to feel it and that's going to influence or is going to behave. So as young parents, as new parents, or as parents of young children, we do need to work a lot on ourselves to make sure we kind of accept our children as they are, that we accept that they might not be exactly how we wanted them to be, or that maybe they don't use the little activities we've made for them, you know, the way we want it. So kind of we need, it's very hard basically to love unconditionally our children, okay, and to just accept them as they are. You know, maybe you have this idea when you discovered Montessori that yes, your child is going to be happy to do a puzzle or to pour between two jugs, and then all they want to do is to climb. Yes. And you have a very active child who doesn't care about anything on the tray, and all they want to do is to climb. And if you start to learn a bit more about Montessori, you will maybe realize that while they are in a gross motor skills period, they are into the sensitive periods to movement, so they kind of need to move, so you need to give them more of that. That's what you would do, but it's harder to have a child like that if you're not an outdoorsy person and a very active person, and all you were dreaming about was those little kind of fine motor skills, Montessori activities. But yeah, it's adjusting our expectations. Yes, yes. I think most of parenting challenges are linked to that. Yeah. Adjusting your expectations. What you were thinking earlier would be, you know, like I know that I was dreaming of of doing little hairstyle to my daughter because she was a little girl and stuff. And when she started to have long hair, I remember trying to do a ponytail, and she just cried and cried. And it was like, I was violent with her or something like that. And so I decided not to do it. And she never liked me doing anything in her hair. So she had kind of a bob for a long time. And now she's like totally into her hair, doing stuff. But you know, as a young mom, I couldn't do it. So I was like, oh, but that was my dream, you know, to have a little girl and to do ponytails. So you need to readjust constantly and just accept your children as they are.
Yeah, my daughter is the same. I always remember meeting other friends who had girls around their ages, and they always had perfectly plaits and all sort of hairstyles. And my daughter's hair was just always crazy and unbrushed. And yes.
So yeah.
Similar.
So yeah.
So now let's look at the other side. What would you say is the most amazing thing about introducing Montessori into parenting, and why should parents go for it? Why would you encourage parents to go for it?
Well, the main thing for me into Montessori is that we respect our children, and we help them to develop as individual, and we help them to fulfill their own potential. I think that really resonated with me when I discovered Montessori, because from my personal experience with my own childhood and my parents was that my parents had big expectations for me and my brother, because my parents didn't go to school for very long. They were factory workers, so they really wanted us to succeed. So they pushed us a lot in school. And I remember having some dreams when I was a teenager, and that was not supported by my parents because they had these dreams that we had to just be successful in school. And growing up as a young adult, I was feeling, you know, the pressure from my parents about, and the society, you know, about what was expected of me. So when I had my children, I had a bit of background as a psychologist and so on. So I had grew up already a bit and did a bit of work on myself and was aware of that, and became more and more aware of that as my daughter, my first daughter, was growing up, because I was feeling that I could become that kind of parents, you know, having big expectations. And I didn't want that. And when I was reading Montessori, I was like, okay, it's all about their own potential. So what is her potential? She has to discover it, basically. All I have to do is to guide her. And it has been super important for me and my husband. My husband is pretty much somebody who is like all about freedom, freedom to be yourself, freedom of speech, and so on. And so it was very important for me and my husband that our children would be free to choose what they wanted to do with their lives, that we would not push them. You know, obviously, I'm sure we do, you know, on an unconscious level, but we wanted to give them opportunities, as many opportunities as we can. But we wanted to really make sure that we were able to fulfill their own potential, that we would be guided by what they were going to show us about their skills, so their kind of interest and so on, and that we would be there just to help them. So I think that's the thing that Montessori teaches, is like every child has a potential. We don't know when they are born, who they're going to become. Obviously, some of us are more privileged than others in the sense that we have means to help our children, obviously. But I think as parents, I feel that we have that duty to make sure that we don't prevent our children to become themselves, that we don't force them to go in one way or in another way. So, yeah, that what for me the main things that kind of underpin my Montessori parenting is to make sure that I give opportunities to my children, but we really follow what they want to do in life and not preventing them, not being a hindrance to their development, basically. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much. So you have already touched on this a little bit, but if you could maybe reiterate what would you recommend to a parent that's going into Montessori? The one easy first step that you would recommend parents take to begin introducing some aspects of Montessori into their lives? What could be the one thing that a parent could do today or tomorrow?
So I would say, because most parents buy a lot of toys, so when they discover Montessori, they might be attracted by the toys, is to first declutter the toys they have. Because we generally have too many toys and too many toys on view, so it would be the first thing. Don't even think about, okay, what toys are Montessori or not Montessori in what I have already, but just display less toys in the playroom, put most of the toys away, just keep the favorite ones or a few that you think are more Montessori, and observe. Observe if your child has enough, if your child seems to walk or play with something that is not even a toy, more attracted by something else, and then you take away most of the stuff first and then you add on and you sort. Sorting the toys is one of the first things you could do, sorting and decluttering the toys. And obviously, you know, the other thing I've talked about it already is like to focus on independence. So if you have a toddler, so you know, one of the first tools you can buy is this kind of crinkle cutter, crinkle knife, that are safe for children. So it's a nice tool to have to allow your child to cut a banana or cucumbers. I think that one of the first tools I gave to my children when they were very little. Yeah, there are two main things that you can do.
Thank you. And what would be something that they shouldn't worry or stress themselves about if they're starting, if a parent is just starting? What should they not worry about for now?
But definitely not worry about the shelfie. No, not worry. Yeah. Not to worry about big items that look like the must-have Montessori. Because you can definitely do Montessori without anything. There is a saying, like a Montessori trainer told me, that you could have all the Montessori materials, like in the classroom, and not raising your children in any Montessori way whatsoever. Or you could have nothing, no specific toys, materials, and so on, and be very Montessori in principle. So it's definitely don't worry about the materials. Don't worry that you don't have the budget for the materials or anything like that. You can really do it without it, at least the Montessori lifestyle.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, because I feel it's really important for parents to know that it's not about the materials. The philosophy goes so much further beyond that. And you can, yeah, like you said, exactly, you can do it without any of the materials. You can still be a Montessori parent. You can still be a Montessori family, even if you haven't got a single Montessori material in your home. Is there anything else that you would like to say to parents who might be starting their journey in Montessori parenting, or any kind of final advice?
Well, I would say, you know, don't hesitate to read a book by Maria Montessori, because there are lots on social media, blogs and so on, but it's always good to go to the source. And so the book by Maria Montessori that I recommend, there is the newest one, the newest published, because obviously it's not new, but the newest one would be Montessori Speaks to Parents, because it's quite clear it's for parents. And so she used to give lectures to parents. Every time she was doing a training for teachers, she was also having lectures for parents who were able to attend. So there is a myth about the fact that Montessori was not about parenting, but, you know, she started to talk to parents early on. She always thought that the principle could be used at home as well. And another great book is Tim Seldin, How to Raise an Amazing Child. It's a very good book to start with, to have an overview of Montessori in a very easy way. And there is a new book from him coming out very soon. Tim Seldin, How to Raise an Amazing Child, those two books, like one from Maria Montessori. There are more from Maria Montessori that you can read, but start with one. Yeah, definitely would be a good way to start.
I'll put a link in the notes to the episode, so if anyone's listening, they can find it. Well, thank you so much, Corinne. This has been really informative and amazing to hear.
Thank you.
Do you want to tell our audience where they can find you, on Instagram and your Facebook group that is very, very active?
Absolutely. So, well, I have a website, which is called themontessorifamily.com, when you can read about the blog, obviously. You can read about our subscription boxes. So we deliver in the UK and Europe, and you can read about the course. And on Instagram, it's also called Montessori Family UK, and the Facebook group is called Montessori for Families UK. And so obviously it's not just the UK, just what was available on Facebook and Instagram, but yeah, you can find information about, you know, Montessori for Families. It's really like, was important for me that my name on social media was for families, because, you know, I've always felt that Montessori was a great way to raise children, and that was for every family.
Great. Thank you so much, Corinne. It was
a
real pleasure speaking to you.
Yes.
That's the end of our episode. Thank you so much to everyone who's listening for sharing your time with us. And thank you to Corinne again for joining us and teaching us so much about Montessori. As always, I'll be holding a live Q&A on my Instagram page. You can contact me with any questions that you have. I'll put a question box up over the weekend. You can find me at Trusting Children, or you can send me an email. My address is Aisha, that's A-I-S-H-A, at trustingchildren.com. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed speaking to Corinne. Thanks for tuning in, and see you next week. We're all in this together, and we have got this.